I am a recording artist, a radio personality, an actress, a TEDx speaker, and most recently, a certified master life coach. And I am just like you, on this wild ride, a page-turning book filled with victorious chapters and chapters of sheer defeat. Well, I'm here in the arena now, here to help you create a beautiful life. Hola, mi gente. This is your favorite chica, Judy Torres, and welcome to Beautiful Life with Judy Torres, the podcast. This is now our second episode of the third season, and I'm so excited because we released our first episode for the first time on YouTube. So now, in addition to hearing it, you can see it. So for example, if all of a sudden my eyeliner is running, you'll know, where before you had no idea. Before, if I slipped and fell off my chair, you would not have known, but now you will know. So if you're tuning into the podcast for the first time, I want to say welcome. Thank you so much for tuning in. I understand that your time is very valuable. And so I hope that you definitely get something out of this podcast. I decided to start this podcast after receiving so much email from people asking for advice. For some reason, it's something that I enjoy helping. I enjoy helping people. I enjoy listening to people's issues. And if I can help, I love to help. But let me give you a little background about who I am. If you're just tuning in for the first time, you're like, who's this Judy Torres girl? So this Judy Torres girl has been singing for 35 years professionally as a recording artist. She's had many hit songs in the 80s and early 90s on radio stations across the country. She's still, well, let's be talking about me in the third person. I still perform to this day, thank God. And I've been on New York's radio station, WKTU 103.5 FM, the Beat of New York. I've been working there as an on-air personality for over 22 years. And I've been doing life coaching for the last 3 years. And that is part of the reason why I'm doing this podcast, because it's a natural flow that if I'm life coaching people, then perhaps we can talk about issues and things that people have and challenges that people are trying to overcome. And helping them, hopefully. The vision of this podcast is to inspire, empower, and encourage.
How long did you say you were singing for? Again, could you just reiterate that?
It's been 35 years.
You've been singing as long as I've been alive, Judy.
Wow. Wow, Vinny, thank you for that. I feel so young right now. I feel, oh man, I'm like 21 again. Thanks.
You are totally rejuvenated, Judy. Well, I tell you what's really cool about this, this whole podcast thing. Back at season one, one of your first episodes where, of course, we had a listener, Vanessa, who was your first caller, she sent us a beautiful email about your podcast season three, episode one, especially being able to see you now. She says, hey, Judy, just showing you some love and appreciation for your latest podcast and video. Thank you for being so real and vulnerable with us. My condolences for your losses and congratulations on your reinvention. May all your dreams come true. You somehow make things sound so doable. Keep up the wonderful work. Lots of love, Vanessa.
That's really cool. And I received a few emails from different people on Instagram and Facebook saying, hey, Judy, you know, I really enjoyed that. That was really awesome. People had questions. You know, it's great. That's one of the best things that I love about social media is I can interact directly with people. And I love doing that. And I think at the end of the day, when people used to ask me what I do for a living, you know, I used to say, I'm a singer. And I am a singer. And then with all these different things added, I was thinking, okay, if I had to put that in one word, what do I do? What do I say? And it finally hit me. I think I'm a communicator.
Absolutely.
That's what I like to do. And if you've ever seen me perform, you know that if you give me the opportunity to speak, I will not shut up.
Every time I'm around you, I learn. So it's good. And you really do teach just by what you say on the podcast. So it's great. We've been getting so much love and so much feedback.
Aww,
and, you know, we want people to keep following.
Oh, you know what? I'm Podomatic, right? Because you can get this podcast on podomatic.com as well. So please, everybody, if you're listening, you're watching, please go ahead and follow me via Podomatic.com or Spotify, iHeartRadio, iTunes, whatever you want. But on Podomatic, every week we get the ratings for how this podcast is doing. And this podcast this week is number four on the mental health topic. So I'll take it. Four is good for the first episode back, because we were gone for a while, because let's be honest, life was happening to me. Seriously, if you tuned into the last episode, you know exactly what happened. So I'm excited and I want to bring it to number one. I just want to. It doesn't have to be number one. It's just that when I do something, I do it all the way. And so I would love the feeling of being number one, you know.
Couldn't have said it any better myself. And you people, subscribe on YouTube as well, Judy's YouTube channel, where we're going to keep this all coming. And I'm sure other content as well, because with the shows coming back and everything, you know, I'm going to pop up and do some videos of her and good stuff for her to put up there and content. So we keep it going. And today's topic, Judy, I know that we said we wanted to really touch upon it, was indeed the loss of your dad. And I know we got into it. We got into it a little bit in the first episode, but I think that we should dedicate a whole episode to it, because there's a whirlwind of emotion that comes with the loss of a parent. In August, when we were recording the final two episodes of season two, you gave some pretty good advice to Speedy, who, if people don't know, is a longtime friend of yours, but also a radio personality. He is the iconic voice of, you know, freestyle shows, emceeing them, screaming way by at the top of his lungs.
Yes.
But he, you know, he took COVID real serious, as did many people. And, you know, he was in solitary for like 4 months in Puerto Rico with his mom. And when he came back, he had these emotional breakdowns over fearing the loss of his mom. Mm-hmm. And your dad was still alive, obviously, at this time. It was just about, it was 2 days after his 90th birthday.
Yeah.
And you gave some pretty sound advice that you probably forgot about. I think that we should revisit that on this episode. So you should, I want to ask you, and maybe the listeners would want to see, does Judy Torres heed her own advice in situations like the one she's in right now?
Does she walk the talk? That's scary. Okay, go ahead.
So I think before we get into that, why don't we talk a little bit about how you felt towards the end with your dad?
So for those of you tuning in for the first time, my father celebrated his 90th birthday. We celebrated his 90th birthday on July 20th. And it was the first time and the only time that I ever put him on video with me, pretty much for anything. And I posted the video and he was very proud and he was very excited, because my father loves the limelight. He loves it. And all of a sudden, I get a phone call from my stepmom, Carmen, and she tells me, I took your father to the hospital. I had to call emergency because he couldn't breathe. So I'm like, okay. Now my father has COPD and he has emphysema because he was a smoker for a very, very, very long time. So when he first got into the hospital, I didn't think anything of it. And of course, that's not true. For a minute, I didn't think anything. And then I was like, I hope it's not COVID. I hope it's not COVID. And then I was like, well, you know, my father's been wearing his mask. He's been careful. I do have to say that they went out frequently, and it's because my father is not the type of person to stay still. And that's part of the reason why he looks so young, because he kept his vitality. At first, they said when he first got admitted to the hospital that he had COVID. The following day, they said, no, they tested him again and it's negative. So I got very angry, because as soon as I heard it was positive, I thought the odds were against him because of his age. Because of the COPD and the emphysema, he is in that high risk category, big time, you know? I was angry because when they said it was negative, it felt like you're playing with my emotions. Because as soon as they said positive, oh my God, you know? And I'm not a doomsday thinker by any means. I'm the eternal optimist. But because I knew the dangers of everything and I knew he was in the high risk category, it made me nervous. So for a second, I went to the panic mode. And then when they said it was negative, I was relieved, but I was angry. And then I was like, do it again, test him again. You know, well, they already tested him, it's negative. No, test him again. Test him again, please. So they tested him 3 days in a row. And for 3 days, it was negative. So he was getting sort of better in the sense that his oxygen levels were increasing, but they never went to the optimal oxygen level that you need. I don't know if they look for 100 or 98, 99, something like that, but he was 93. So every day progressed and it was like one day he was great and another day he wasn't. So thankfully a different doctor came in and the doctor decided, we tested him 3 times and it was negative, but you know what? One more time, because something's not right. He's just not getting better. And it came back positive. And at that point, I believed it. And then it was torture because I have multiple sclerosis. I was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis. And so I'm in a high risk category too. I'm one of those people that has a compromised immune system. So I'm thinking, okay, if I go see him and God forbid I get COVID, it could be dangerous. I didn't know what to do. And so nobody was allowed to see him. You know, his wife stayed with him in the hospital. And I said to her, he has COVID. What are you doing in the hospital? Go home. But he didn't want her to leave because he didn't want to be alone. And she didn't want to leave him.
So just to set the record straight, he was not on a ventilator. He was breathing and he was speaking.
He was not in a ventilator. He was breathing. He was speaking. And I want to let the public know they were both vaccinated.
Wow.
With both injections, both shots. So despite being careful, wearing the mask, my father is the type of person that when a doctor says something, he listens. Whatever the doctor says, he does it. So as soon as he heard, wear the mask, disinfect, wash, he did all those things.
And he looked pretty good for his age. And he was pretty physically fit for his age.
Yeah, he was pretty good. I mean, you know, he had, his knees were arthritic, but other than that, he was fine. He wasn't walking with a walk or anything. He was, believe me, I thought my father was going to outlive me. So I couldn't understand what was going on. And so finally, a few days later, his wife did get COVID. And so Carmen went home because the hospital said, you have to go home. You have to self quarantine. And when you're good to go, once you're not contagious anymore, you can come back. So she did that. And while she was gone, that's when I would say he started to deteriorate. And he would call me and sometimes he would be very lucid. He would be speaking normally and talking to me. And his biggest thing was tell Carmen to come back. Tell Carmen to come back. Carmen needs to come back. I said, but she can't come back. Not yet. But once she comes back, she can stay with you. But right now she can't. How could she take care of you if she's not well? You got to let her get better, you know. No, but she was here before, but she has COVID, which means she can be a threat to other people. And she doesn't need to be hospitalized. If you don't need to be hospitalized, that means you go home, you know. And then sometimes he would call me and then he wouldn't be making sense. He would be ranting. And my father was speaking to me in Spanish, like a lot of the time. And most people wouldn't see that as a danger sign, but I did because my father didn't speak to me in Spanish. Once in a blue moon, he would try to test me to see if I understood what he was saying.
So do you think like in those moments, he might've been reverting back to his childhood or something that, you know?
I wondered what was going on because he was rambling, you know, he was rambling. And then another time he would call me and he would be yelling, this nurse, I need a nurse. And I've been sitting here, complaining that they're not waiting on him basically hand and foot, you know? And I try to say to him, puppy, they're very busy and you gotta be patient and, you know, so then I called the nurse's station and asked, can you just check in on him a little bit more? He's not used to being alone. He's always with his wife, you know? And then, a few days later I had a show. He wasn't getting better, but I was talking to him all the time. And he would call me 2-3 o'clock in the morning sometimes because he was lonely and he was scared and he probably couldn't sleep, you know? And so every time the phone rang, I ran to the phone and I talked to him but it was difficult. It was getting difficult to have conversations with him because he wasn't making sense. And so, of course, I don't want to hang up on him, but what do I do? What do I say? You know, except I love you, puppy, you know, hang in there. Karma's going to come soon. I'm going to come soon too. And we're going to be together and we're going to do this. We're going to do that. And so I had a show and I did the show and on my way to the show, I got a phone call that he may or may not make it till Monday. And I'm like, what do you mean may or may not make it? Are you trying to tell me he may not make it? Well, the thing is, he goes back and forth from getting better to not getting better. So we're not really sure. Okay. And I thought for a second, do I turn around? What do I do? What do I do? You know? So I decided, all right, my brother and my sister both said they were going to go see him. So I said, okay, they can go see him. And maybe I'll go in the morning. So on the way back from the show, my brother said he was with him. My brother said he seemed okay. My sister saw him. And then the next morning, I woke up like 6:30 in the morning and I just didn't feel right. It just didn't feel right. And I want to let the listeners know and the viewers know, when you have a gut feeling, you follow it always. Your gut will never steer you wrong. And so I just had a feeling, and my immediate thing is I got to get dressed and I got to go see him now. I went to see him. They were giving him oxygen through a mask, like through a machine, but it wasn't a ventilator. I don't know what the name of the oxygen thing is.
Probably like the BiPAP type of thing.
Right. So it's like, it's funny how as soon as I walked in, I had the gown on, I had the double mask. You're covered from head to toe pretty much. And I came in and I said, "Puppy," and he said, "Oh my God, are you here? Judy, that you? That's you?" I said, "Yeah, that's me." And he's grabbing my arm, like almost like with a desperation.
Like, get me out of here kind of thing.
Like, it was like he was relieved, it was like he was relieved. And so I talked to him for a while and he was okay. And I could see his breathing was labored, it's hard when you see someone sick in the hospital, especially when they're older. Looking at the bruises from all the different injections they're giving him, and it's real painful to watch. My father, who's so strong all the time, all of a sudden he's not so strong anymore. He's fragile. And I sat down. I talked to him for a while. He pointed at the television. I said, "You want me to change the channel?" He said, "No." And he pointed and I said, "What?" And he said, 12:12. I said, "Oh, you want me to put the news on at 12? Yes, that's his thing, the news. You gotta watch the news." So I said, okay. So I changed the channel for him and talked to him a little more. He fell asleep. While he fell asleep, I prayed for him. And I just said to God, "Your will be done. I don't want my father to go. I want extra time with him. Please help, And then I sang to him. I sang Ave Maria to him twice. I don't know why twice, but I did. I sang the song from the musical Yentl, "Papa, Can You Hear Me?" And I sang the Our Father to him. And he woke up and the doctor came in. And then he started ranting again, but this time he was ranting in Spanish about guns and that he needs his gun. And he was like, kind of like in a panic. And I really felt like he was hallucinating, or he was remembering something from a long time ago or something, or maybe he was just having a dream and he was dreaming with his eyes wide open, which that can happen too. So I said, "Papi, you don't need your gun." He said, "Yes, I do. Yes, I do. No, you don't need it. You're safe. You're here in the hospital." And he took a deep breath and, he said, you're so beautiful, Judy. I said, "Thank you, puppy." And my father rarely complimented me. Rarely. So it was, it took my breath away to hear him say it, And so we went back to sleep and I prayed for him again. And I was with him for maybe almost 2 hours. And the doctor said, "We have to make a decision whether we're going to give him care to make him as comfortable as possible, or whether you want to keep treating him for COVID and see if he gets better." So I said, "Can you give me an hour? Let me talk to his wife and my brother. I don't want to make that decision alone." And she said, "Okay, you can have an hour." And she left. And I looked at my father and something told me, this is the last time you're going to see him. So I thought, all right, so I have to say whatever I need to say. So I said, "I love you, puppy. I will always love you. And I said, I forgive you. My relationship with my father was a difficult one a lot of the time. Not all the time, but a lot of the time. And so I didn't want him to leave the earth without knowing that I wanted him to know I forgave him. And I believe that even though he was with his eyes closed or whatever, I'm a firm believer that they hear you even when they're sleeping. So I said, I love you and I forgive you. And if you want to go, if you want to, I release you. And I got in my car. Again, I looked at him and I was like, I think this is the last time. And am I okay with it, you know? And something told me if I stuck around, I would get more emotional. And I wanted to talk to my brother and his wife really quick. I want to figure out something so I could tell the doctor. So I got in my car and I called them and we were talking about what we were going to do. And, you know, I got another call while I was on the phone and it was the doctor. And she said, Judy, I'm so sorry to tell you that your father has passed.
And what was the increment of time from when you'd left the hospital?
20 minutes.
Wow.
15, 20 minutes, something like that. Maybe 10. I don't know. It was short because I got in the car, just left the parking lot. I must have been half a mile away or something like that when I got the call. So I don't know. It's hard. It's just, all I know is that it was, it's like part of me expected and part of me was shocked. I didn't know what to do. So I was still on the phone with his wife and my brother. And I told him that he passed and she screamed. It's horrible, you know, and I even wonder if I said it right. I wonder if I could have said it in a way, a softer way, a gentle way, but you know.
So for people that are listening and that are watching this, they could take it one of two ways, that it was a beautiful thing. Like, this is the way I would take it, especially having, you know, the spiritual grounding that I have and having been in the room with loved ones that have passed, to be one of the lucky people to be there for somebody at the very end, to be the last person or one of the last people that they seen or that they experienced comfort from, knowing you might have helped him realize it's okay for me to go because I know everything's going to be all right. Maybe you offered that. Or, wow, should I have stayed? Would he have stayed around if I would have stayed? Where do you feel that you fit in that equation?
It's so confusing because some people tell me he was waiting for you because everybody else had visited him but me.
I believe that myself.
And some people are like, you helped him, you know, pass, you helped him transition. But my father did a lot of talking when he was here about, you know, I hate to say it, but he gave me a guilt trip a lot, you know, and he did. He gave me the guilt trip a lot. And so he used to say things like, oh, you know, because he would say, you know, when am I going to see you? I said, puppy, I can see you next week, but I can't come today. Ah, you know what? You're going to see me when I'm dead. That's when you're going to see me. And I said, puppy, stop it. So he did a lot of guilt trips. So believe it or not, when I told him, if you need to go, I release you, I wondered for a second if his spirit was being mean and mad. You know what? Okay, you release me? Okay, I'm going to go. Because I can hear my father's voice in my head all the time.
But then wouldn't he get up and actually rant in the room to you?
I don't know. I don't know. It's just, you know, it was, there's a song by an Irish singer. She sings in English, but she's Irish. And her name is Jean Oliver. And there's a song called Beautiful Sadness. And I relate to the lyrics of that so much. She says, just because it's over doesn't mean it didn't happen. Doesn't mean it wasn't beautiful, even with the pain. You're lovely to remember. And looking back, I'm feeling like I'm walking very slowly through a soft and misty rain, and a beautiful sadness comes over me. You know, that's what it feels like. I feel honored that I was the last person. There's something about it that makes me feel good. The idea that if he did wait, then he really did love me. And so I'm honored, you know. Do I wish I had more time with him? Yes, but everybody does. So for those of you listening, watching, time matters. The time matters. If you're not speaking to your parent, you need to speak to them. need to make that phone call. You need to make that apology. You know, I apologize to my father too. I wasn't a perfect daughter. I was a good one. I know I was a good daughter. I worked very hard. You know, the whole honor thy father and mother thing I take to heart. But I wasn't always perfect. I could have seen him more, you know. I could have tried not to take things more so personal when he was in a bad mood. Because when he was a type of man that when he was in a bad mood, if you were around him, you were the target. And that's hard for me. You know, I was sort of tired of that. But as he got older, it wasn't as often. And we did speak a lot more. You know, when he turned, when he was like 89, 88, he started to talk to me a little bit more sanely, more calmly. You know, he wasn't always so upset all the time. And it's funny because for those of you, I know there were a lot of fans who sent me messages saying, oh, your father was a great guy. Your father was so funny. Your father was so sweet. Your father was so handsome. Your father always talked about you. He was so proud of you. And I'm like, he was? My father never told me that to my face. It was just, you know, pretty interesting how you can be one way with one person and a different way, completely different way with another. But it was nice to get those messages. It was nice to know that people's experience of my father was nice, was good. And even at the funeral, so many people showed up. A lot of his neighbors showed up and they loved him. And he argued like crazy with some of them. So to hear them say, oh, your father was great, you know, it was really cool. So actually, you know what I learned today? I realized today I missed his voice. I missed his voice. My father never got rid of his Cuban accent. And I told you, and I'll tell everybody too. And I said this in my one woman show. My father always introduced himself. Like if I would never recognize his voice, like I don't know my own father's voice. So he was always, you know, hello, Judy, this is your father, Peter Torres, you know. And he would sign the cards, love your father, Peter Torres, with a big P, like if he was signing an autograph. I loved it. And it's one of my favorite memories about him because it was every time, like clockwork. Like I, you know, it just made me laugh. And it's still a great memory.
So in your one woman show, you go through some things and you, mm-hmm. you know, you play out some stuff. And for those of you that didn't see it, hopefully when it comes back, you get the opportunity to see it because it really is a riveting performance. And
well, thank you. Oh, riveting. That's really good word. That's a good word, Vinny.
Well, riveting. It is. It was moving. Riveting. I mean, I was second row from the stage and I felt all of the emotion and all the energy roar right up in my face. And, you know, you really captured the essence of what it was that you were trying to portray. And one of the things that really stuck out to me was the experiences with your dad. When you said that you forgave him, did you instantly feel it? Was it something you were working on for some time? Or is it at that point, you're just like, you know what? Nothing else matters right now other than this moment that I have.
It's a combination of all those. I've been working on forgiving him for years. That's the truth. When you're a child, you have no control over your life. Everybody has control over you, what you say, what you wear, where you go, what you do. And sometimes there are experiences that are quite traumatic and you remember them. They're sealed into your memory or seared into your memory forever. And so there were things I was angry with my father about. And when I was in my 20s, I actually attempted suicide. And thank God I didn't succeed. And when I came out of the hospital, I was in therapy and the therapist suggested I bring my father to come to a session. And when I told my father that I wanted him to come, he said, I'm sorry you're having mental problems, but I can't come because my knee is, no, like, you know, I was like, wow. And I was very angry because not that it was my father's fault. It's just that there was a gaping hole in my heart for my father. I wanted my father around. I wanted to have a really good connection with him and I didn't. And that was hurting me. And I never got a chance to tell him things like I was terrified of him. I never got to say, Papi, you scare me. Your temper scares me. I never had a chance to say, what, where were you? Because my mother and my father split up when I was 7. And I understand my mother had to leave. You know, it was an abusive situation. My mother had to leave. But my mother never kept us from our father. So when my father came around, sometimes he would come and sometimes he wouldn't. And sometimes I'd be waiting for him to show up, to pick me up. And my brother would give up after a while. And I'd be standing on, no, but Papi's coming, but he's coming. And he wouldn't come. Sometimes it rained and I sat on the stoop in the rain waiting for him. So you don't forget that. So guys, if you're a parent and you tell your kid you're coming, come. If you can't come, let them know you can't come. And then you better make it up to them real quick. So my father missed moments. A lot of the moments, and he missed times that I really needed a man's opinion to tell me what men were like, what they might try to do. You know, a father serves as a protector, as a comforter, you know, and there was a part of me that just needed that so much. So I was mad at him for a long time. As I got older and I started to think about life and I started to read a lot and started to get a little bit more spiritual, I started to realize that my father was doing the best he could at the time with what he knew at the time. And I'll say it again, because it's a big lesson for anybody out there. When you are pissed off at your parents for something they did when you were a child, even if it was wrong, even if it was unfair, they were doing the best they could at the time with what they knew at the time. And chances are they were very young. And they didn't know better. Because when you know better, you do better. That's what Maya Angelou says, or Oprah says, one of the two. When you know better, you do better.
I mean, I think about it now at my age, I would never be able to like properly like know everything about raising a kid right now. I see my own friends that are my age that are first time parents and they're like, this is the scariest thing ever. So yeah. I could totally relate to that.
Yeah. And some parents are not prepared to be parents, right? I mean, and some parents have the wherewithal or the insight to say, I know I can't do this. And that's why they give their children up for adoption. That's not all of them. I'm sure there's different reasons, but I think for the most part, they recognize that. And then some parents know they got no business being parents, but the second the baby's born, they snap out of it. Like, oh my God, I'm a parent now. I got to take care of my kid. And something clicks. And then sometimes it doesn't. And they're not ready, you know? And I'm not saying my father wasn't ready. I know my father's definition of love for a child was to provide for them, to provide. That means, because he told me many times, oh, you had the most beautiful clothes when you were a little girl. I put you this red dress and I did this hat. And da, 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 da. So he was very proud of that. He was able to clothe me and feed me. And that's what he was working for. So in his mind, that was his definition of love. Now, when you're a baby and you're a young child, those things are necessary. But you need the love and you need the affection. And I'm not saying he didn't love me. I remember, I don't have too many memories of him. I don't remember anything before 7, which I think is odd, but I don't. But I do remember. I remember him dancing with me one time. I remember him holding me, carrying me. I remember him coming back from the Cuban bakery and bringing me sweets. And I remember him bringing me Tootsie Pops. He would bring a whole bunch of it. He would hold it in his hand like a bouquet of flowers and say, pick one. And I think to this day, that's why I love sweets so much. Because to me, that's how he showed me love, you know? But that whole comforting thing, the hugging, when he hugged me, he hugged me hard. It was like, he never embraced me. It was, you know, and I'm
there was like, definite oh. like daddy's little girl kind of
no
connection.
No I know he felt that way about me, and I think we had the connection when I was younger, and that's why for many years whenever we talked, he always talked about that. And I was so mad at him. I was a baby, you're supposed to love me, you know. Oh, but you did this. And he told me I would stand on the table and sing to him. That's what he told me. My mother said the same thing. So it's like, I don't remember that, but I know that we had a connection, because if we didn't have a connection at all when he passed, I wouldn't have felt anything.
Would you describe him as like, you know, like Kevin Rosario from In the Heights, the man who owned the cab station that was very proud and sin vergüenza and all that stuff?
Yeah. Like, sin vergüenza. Well, very good, Vinny, sin vergüenza. Look at you.
Uh-huh, la banza.
My father was very proud and very old school, old world machismo, where he came from the upbringing that the men tell the women what to do and the women obey. And he came from the idea that the man goes to work and the woman stays home. And as long as he's providing, he's doing the right thing, you know? And that's a different age. That's a different culture. That's a whole different generation. And, you know, I guess, you know, I've just come to a point where I accept a lot of things. I surrender to a lot of things. I surrendered the idea that my father would ever be any different. That took a lot. You know, and I had a lot of conversations with my mom. My mom would be like, Judy, that's your father. That's who he is. That's the way he is, you know? So finally I had to find peace with it. So I had read somewhere that there's a spiritual belief that, and I know a lot of people won't agree with this, and I'm not saying you should. I'm just saying I was open. I wanted so bad to find a way to forgive him and to come to peace with everything that I was like, my ears and my eyes were open to listen to anything that might help me change my perception, because part of forgiveness is changing your perception. And so there's a spiritual belief that before we are born, we choose our parents and we choose our life circumstances and our life challenges. And for some, they believe even choose how you die, how you're going to go out. You know, I don't know if it's true. And the way I look at it is I have my own beliefs, but at the same time, who's to say I'm right? So it's good sometimes just to listen to what other people think, just for the heck of it. Just like some people believe you die and you come back as another person, or you come back as an animal, or you come back, you know, depending on how good you were while you're here, determines what you come back as. So I don't know. I don't know if I believe it, but hey, who knows? So if that belief is true, and I chose my father, why did I choose him? Why would I choose that? Why would I choose for things to be so difficult? And the only thing I could think of is my father was a great spiritual teacher for me. If he had been there, I would have a different life. I learned to figure it out. I learned to find a way to be stronger, you know? And I definitely learned tolerance. I definitely learned patience. These are the things my father taught me. I learned how I find out what somebody's story is. Because when you know someone's story, you can understand why they made the decisions they made. And I really didn't know my father's story. My father never shared his story with me, which tells me it must have been pretty bad, which could explain why he was so tough. Because I'm going to be tough because you can't hurt me. I'm not going to let you hurt me. You know, I'm going to hurt you first before you hurt me. He's obviously had some angry issues. He was angry at the world, you know. He adored his mother. His mother passed away around the holidays. He never celebrated another Christmas or New Year's after that. Never, never.
Interesting. You bring that up. You bring that up when you spoke to Speedy.
You know, how you handle life is how you decide to perceive it. Your perception is your truth. And sometimes to get over something, all you have to do, it's not that easy, to make a decision. That's the first thing. You have to decide, I want to forgive this person. And then from there, you rephrase your thought. You think of the negative thought and you have to rephrase it into something positive, something you can work with. You know, I had a client actually today that I was life coaching, and she was very angry. Her husband had passed away and she was very angry. And I said, you're angry at who? At him. Why? Because he left. So I said to her, you can look at it as he left me, he abandoned me, and he left. Or you can look at it as I was loved by him. He chose me. He loved me. He loved no other woman but me. What an honor and what a privilege to know that I could be loved like that. That's a blessing that you had him for that long and that kind of love. And it was weird. It was like something shifted in her face. I could see it. And sometimes that's what it is. Sometimes you got to find a way to look at it differently. And if you can look at it differently, you can learn something from it. And when you, once you do that, then you're not so mad anymore.
Right.
And you can forgive him. You can forgive him.
Wow. So do you think that his demeanor with you and the relationship you had made it a little easier to deal with his passing?
You know, there was something really, I mentioned this in the last episode. There was something really magical about his 90th birthday. That balloon, the balloon that I bought him the balloon, and he was a little kid. He was so happy. And if you watched the video that I posted on Facebook, you could see it. He was beaming. And I just felt like, you know what? We're okay. Me and him are okay. Like, forget everything that happened. The past is the past. All you really have is the present. You know, people who are depressed because they're stuck in the past. People who are anxious because they worry about the future. All you have is right now. And if I chose to constantly be like, well, he did this to me and he did that and he wasn't doing this, and then I would be mad today. But that happened so long ago. And he's still trying to have a relationship with me. So I make the best of it. And that's what I did, you know?
And what's the irony that, you know, you longed for this all your life, this connection with him. And in the end, he needed you.
I guess, you know, I don't know. All I know is I tried my best. That's all. I tried my best a lot. I really tried. I never gave up on him. And a lot of people gave up on him. But something in me knew that I have to try. I always said, I don't want him to leave this earth with me not talking to him. And I'm glad I did it. I don't have any regrets. You know, I wish there were things I said to him that I was too afraid to say, because when I would try to tell him things, if obviously he didn't like what he was hearing, he would get angry. And I grew up being afraid of angry. I grew up being afraid of anger, because I saw in my lifetime, in my youth, in my childhood, when people got angry, somebody got hurt. So I anytime someone got angry, I, you know, back away real fast.
And that's interesting, because in the last episode, you said you'd never want to be the reason for making somebody mad or cause them to become angry, because you'd witnessed so much.
It's hard profound. For me to handle. Yeah, it's hard. Thank you for bringing that up. It's hard for me to accept anger. It's hard for me to express it, but it's harder for me to accept it, because people have every right to be angry. And I think that for those who are well-rounded and functional, when you express your anger, it's expressed healthy, in a healthy fashion. But when you begin to curse at people, when you begin to bring up the past, when you
demean them.
Yeah. When you put them down, when you throw something, when you break something, those are not healthy ways to show anger. And that's what I grew up with. So when someone's angry with me, of course, you know, the initial thing is, oh my God, am I in danger? And then I have to remind myself, I'm an adult now. I can handle it. When I was a kid, I couldn't, but I can now, you know. That's usually the first reaction. And the second one is, I don't want to get you upset. I'm going to get deep here. But some of that is the past trauma. You know, growing up as a kid, I saw a lot of violence. And so when someone's angry at me, even if I know they're not going to hurt me, my first reaction is, you know, it's like a trauma. It's almost like a PTSD.
Yeah,
I'm
not going to say it's PTSD. You revert back.
Because PTSD is worse than that. But yeah, so... But I know that while I'm here on this earth, there's things that I have to learn and things I have to work through. And anger is one of those. And I'm okay with that, you know?
So I say we take a listen now. You hit on some of the stuff that you actually mentioned. So it is pretty interesting. I think Judy Torres does actually walk the talk. But you gave some pretty good grounding advice to one of your colleagues and friends that the world laughs with and laughs at for comic relief, but it just goes to show that behind the microphone and behind the stage, we're all human. And, you know, he had some pretty rough moments, but there you were doing what you do best. So let's take a listen.
Okay.
What happened was I felt like my mind was playing games on me, because everything that I kept thinking of was, what happens if I'm not here for my mom? What happens if something happens to my mom? What's this? What's that? What's this? And you know what? And I never thought of these things before. And I'm running downstairs, you know, waking up mom in the middle of the night. Are you okay? You okay? You know, it got a little, you know, really out of control.
How long ago did that happen?
6 or 7 months ago.
Okay. And you know, how are you feeling now?
You know what, Judy? And I'm going to keep it. Once I got the vaccine and I knew mom was safe once she got the vaccine, I know she's not 1,000% safe. Don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. But once she got the vaccine and my uncle got the vaccine, that kind of took like a whole weight off me, because Judy, I was so bad. I don't know if you've seen my car. I had 4 or 5 cans of Lysol in my car. I had about 5 or 6 bottles of hand sanitizer. I had 2 boxes of masks. I would wear a double mask, triple mask sometimes. My clothes, I would take them off outside. That's how bad I got. Mm-hmm. You know, and I didn't want family over. I didn't want nobody over.
Well, listen, when COVID hit, it struck all of us really hard. First of all, none of us had any idea how serious it was actually going to be. We had ideas, but we had no idea how bad it was going to get. We had no idea how many people were going to die, how many people were going to be hospitalized, put on respirators, et cetera. And the thing that was very scary was that it was the older people and people with compromised immune systems, et cetera, that were the most vulnerable. And I know for you, and I know for myself and many people out there, all of a sudden it was like our parents, our grandparents, like, oh my God, you know, right. I didn't see my mother for a very long time because I was scared. Cause the idea that you could walk around having the virus and have no symptoms and you can pass it on to somebody. I told my mother, if I got you sick, I would never forgive myself.
That was my mentality at all times.
Right now, this age range that we're in, right? Our parents are older. Our parents are more fragile. They start to have health issues. They start to have all these weird pains. They're not as mobile as they used to be. They don't have that pep in their step as much. Just lots of changes you start to notice in your parents, right? And I can totally, totally associate with you. I totally relate to you. It totally resonates when you tell me, you know, mom is 81 and I'm worried. You know, my mom is 72, but my mom has health issues and I'm worried too. My father just turned 90 yesterday and I see him and I'm worried too. It's like anytime the phone rings, I go, oh my God. I want to say something to you. One day we're going to lose our parents.
Oh,
I know, but it's not today. So listen to me. When people suffer from depression, most of the time they're depressed because they're thinking about the past. They're stuck in the past. They haven't gotten over something that's happened. People who are anxious, worried, it's because they're stuck in the future. They're wondering, what if, what if, what if?
I'm in between, actually.
Exactly. You're a little bit of both. All you have right now, Speedy, is today. All you have is the present. That's all you have. Yesterday is gone. Tomorrow hasn't happened yet. You don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. If you're worried all the time about what if mom dies, what if mom dies, what if mom dies, you're not enjoying mom now. I mean, you're waking her up in the middle of the night to see if she's okay. You're interrupting her sleep.
She locks her room now at night.
I may not have the proper experience to bring this up, but I think it's important to address. Complete this sentence for me.
Mm-hmm.
If I lose mom, I will.
Wow. I know Speedy stops existing. Once my mom is, I don't think Speedy will ever be Speedy again. I'm going
to
be honest.
I beg to differ. And I'm going to tell you why. I sat down with my mom a long time ago and I had a genuine conversation with her. And I told her the truth. I said, Mom, the day you die will be the worst day of my life. I don't even know how I'm going to go on. Because my mom is my best friend. And I know she's your best friend. And I know that you made a promise to take care of her. Is that right?
Yes.
Who did you promise?
My pop, before he passed away.
Does she have everything she needs?
I believe so.
Does she have a roof over her head?
Yep.
Is she hungry?
Nope.
Does she want for anything?
No, I take a shot.
Do you take her to her doctor's appointments and stuff?
Yes.
So is it safe to say that for 24 years you've taken care of her?
Yeah.
So if your father came down and saw you today, would he not look at you and say, good job, my son. You have done well. You've done me proud.
Yep.
You've done your duty. You've done your job. You have successfully taken care of mom at your father's request on his dying bed, which, by the way, is a huge responsibility. You've done it, Speedy. You've done it excellently.
Yeah.
Going back to what I was talking about with my mom, I told her, I said, mom, I'm really scared to lose you. I don't know what I'm going to do. And my mom gave me a few instructions. My mom said, first of all, make sure people give me flowers before I die, not when I die. I don't want flowers after I die. I want them when I'm alive. Second of all, you need to know that when I go, I'm going to be so happy. I'm going to be with God. I'm going to be happy. I'm going to be in heaven. I get to watch over you. She said, third of all, don't you dare grieve me. Be happy for me. And you better live life to the fullest. That's the only way I'm going to be proud of you. Your mom would not want you to not be Speedy. Your mom, the way you honor your mother's legacy, Speedy, is by living your life and continuing to yell, "Wepa!" and bringing the joy that you bring to people. That's the way you honor her. You dishonor her by stopping. You dishonor her by saying, I'm done. Your mom loves you and you love your mom, and that connection will never break. We are spiritual beings here having a human experience. This is temporary. You're going to be with her. It's a given. 99% of the time, our parents go before us. It's part of the natural law of order of things. And you are worried because for some reason, you're so enmeshed with taking care of her that to you, you're both connected, that it can never be severed. And it won't be severed. Spiritually, it won't be severed. Physically, it will be severed, but not spiritually. You've got to feed yourself things. You've got to do things on your own that bring you some joy so that when the time does come, you're not lost. And you say, I don't know what to do. I don't know where to go. I don't know who to talk to. I don't know what to do with my life. Your job in taking care of your mother, one of the ways you take care of your mother is to continue to take care of yourself. I'm gonna share something that I don't know if I should share it, but I'm gonna do it anyway. For you and for people who are listening who may need this. My father lost his mother. He brought his mother from Cuba when he was younger, and his mother died. After his mother died, naturally he was depressed, right? His mother was his lifeline. His mother was the parent that nurtured him, that showed him unconditional love, probably the only person in the world that ever did that for him at the time. And when she died, he was so distraught and he stopped celebrating. He stopped celebrating Christmas. He doesn't celebrate Christmas. He doesn't celebrate Thanksgiving. He doesn't celebrate New Year's Eve. Because his idea, his image is that, well, mom's not here anymore, so I can't do that. If I celebrate, it's like saying I never loved my mother. What my father doesn't realize is that he has cheated his children out of enjoying time with him on the holidays.
You know what? I never thought of it that way.
And he doesn't allow himself to be happy. And I imagine that his mother is looking down saying, my son, I want you to be happy. Just do it. I think that you developing a sense of yourself and who you are and what you like, and surround yourself with people who lift you up and lift up your spirits, that's what you need to do. If and when mom passes, you are not going to be the only person here who's lost their mother. And if your purpose is to make people laugh, then when you continue to go on, despite your mom being gone, and you make people laugh, you will give other people that strength. that they'll say, if Speedy can get past this and he's okay, I'm going to be okay. That's your gift to the world.
Wow. Promise I wasn't going to cry, sis, but you do it to me all the time.
I'm not trying to make you cry. I'm trying to give you encouragement. I'm trying to give you something you can hold on to so that if and when something like this happens, you understand. See, life is, Speedy, life is how you look at it. It's all about how you choose to look at it. If you look at it like when mom goes, I'm done, then you'll be done because that's what you believe. But if you say, you know what? Mom loves me so much that mom raised a good man. And I'm going to show everybody what that looks like. And you know, damn it, I came on this earth to make people laugh. And that's what I'm going to do. And I'm going to let people know that even though I lost my mother's spirit, my mother's joy lives inside me. And I continue her legacy and I keep the family going because that's what I do. And I will not let anybody stop me from making people happy because that's what mommy wants from me. She said, pa'lante, and I keep going. I will never stop.
Thoughts, reactions? Was it what you needed to hear at this moment?
One of the things I learned from listening to that was when you do have a belief and you put it into motion and you practice it, it stays with you. It stays with you. So, I think I didn't want this episode to be so emotional, but I think that I think I feel pretty good. I was very afraid of losing both my parents. My fear with my father was that when he would pass, I would be really mad. That was my fear, that I would be mad that I didn't say certain things to him that I wanted to say. But I healed a lot about the anger and I forgave a lot about it. And so the only thing that I have now is that I just wish I had a little bit more time with him. But otherwise, you know, I wish that when I went to see him, he was more lucid. He was more aware. I would have had probably a different conversation maybe, but everything happens the way it's supposed to happen. And you trying to make it any different will do nothing but bring you stress, anxiety, depression, and agony. What happens, happens. Everything that happens in this life is the way it's supposed to be. Where you are in your life right now is exactly where you're supposed to be. And if you just realize you are where you're supposed to be and you don't have what you want because it's not meant for you yet, it doesn't mean it's not coming. It just means not yet. So what do you do while you're in the meantime? While you're in the meantime, you prepare. Prepare for what it is that you want. Work on yourself, make yourself the best version of yourself so that when that opportunity comes, you get it, you snatch it.
Wow.
Vinny, you're very quiet, Vinny, you okay?
Yeah, you spoke to my soul and everybody else that's listening. So what is the final piece of advice that you give to somebody right now that needed to hear this, needed to see this, you know, that is at that crossroads that you might've been at, and thankfully, it looks like you got over the hurdle.
Mm-hmm. Do what you need to do before that person passes, if you can. Sometimes we can't do it. Sometimes it's sudden. Sometimes we just get that phone call, you know? I believe when people pass, I believe their spirit is in a better place. And I believe that it's like, imagine if instantly, all of a sudden, you don't have those aches and pains. Imagine if you have a disease, all of a sudden, you don't have that disease anymore. Imagine receiving the love that you never received before. But when you pass, all of a sudden, the illness is gone, the pain is gone, and this overwhelming, unconditional, amazing love is there. And the people you lost are there to embrace you. That's the vision that many of us have for heaven. Other people have different visions, and whatever your vision is, I think that's what it is, to be honest with you. But if you can remember that, then don't worry if they don't forgive you. Don't worry if they're mad at you. Don't worry if you didn't speak to them before. Trust me, they're okay with it. And they love you anyway. But I think that for you, for your health, for your well-being, if you can tell them you love them, tell them. If you can forgive them, forgive them. Even if you don't, make believe. You can say, I want to forgive you. I'm working on forgiving you. That's the beginning of it. You don't forgive people for them. You forgive people for you. so that the event that happened where they hurt you, you know, you are no longer chained to it anymore. Because that's really what it is. As long as you resent, the pain continues. It's really, really important for your soul, for your health, your mental health, your physical health, because that anger, that resentment over time sours, and it literally poisons inside, and your body will find a way to show you how bad it is.
So if there's something that you're looking to make peace with, friends, and you want to be on an episode of our podcast this season, Judy wants to hear from you. So hit her up with an email, judytorreslifecoach@gmail.com, or of course on all forms of social media, including TikTok at Judy Torres Music. Judy, final thoughts for this episode. I am looking forward to a great season now that you got some of these hefty topics off your chest.
Yeah, seriously. Can we do something lighter next episode? Let's
You're
do something
beaming.
Fun. Let's do something fun. No, I'm, you know, life is just this weird, crazy journey. And there's times when it's euphoric and you, oh my God, you're so happy. And there's times when it's, you just wish you could crawl back in bed and never come out. You know, you just have to show up for life. You just got to hang in there, and the most absolute thing is that it's going to change. Life changes all the time, so you have your good days, and you know if eventually one day a bad day is going to come, so you better enjoy these good days. And then the bad day comes, and you have to remember that the good days will come again, but you've got to hang in there. You've got to show up. You've got to be part of it. You've got to participate. And part of that participation is letting go of the negative feelings, including forgiveness. You know, I'm glad that I had the time I had with my father. I am honored to know that I was with him before he passed. I love you, puppy. I love him forever. In a weird way, I love him more now. It's like I think of things that happen, and I go, man, wow, we made it somehow. You know, he was 90 and there I was still there. And I never left. And I feel really proud about that. I do.
So what should you always remember?
That there's no reason to cry.
I'm Vinny Petunio. She's Judy Torres. And hopefully the rest of this season, you can help us help you find a beautiful life. Thanks for watching. And we'll see you next time.
Okay. I love you. Bye-bye.